E1.
Number 3A.
Well, we investigated yesterday the great change that takes place when consciousness is transforming itself from one paradigm to a new paradigm. And so I want to go over it again and pinpoint the main aspects of these various phases. We said that the old paradigm is the basis of what is called normal science. And Kuhn analyzes some of the characteristics of normal science, and I think it is good to do that for us because it also indicates to us what kind of difficulties we may encounter when we want to make that passage from normal science to mature science. So I speak about normal science. Kuhn says that normal science tries to force all phenomena into the framework of a paradigm. See, that's the interesting part in it, that once we have formed to ourselves, also in Christian Science, some kind of paradigm, some kind of accepted theory and practice, that then we try to put everything that comes into our lives, into our practice, into that old paradigm. With other words, we try to make things fit. This is one of the greatest drawbacks of the whole development which we have gone through for the last 30 years or so, that students also along the Dorley line are trying to make everything fit into the established paradigm of 30 years ago. That expression, "it fits perfectly," is one of these expressions which naturally indicate that one tries with all one's force and all one's arguments to sustain always the old paradigm. Instead that we would be very open to see that there are anomalies and that these anomalies would lead us into recognizing that perhaps there is a completely different view and a different model of thought necessary to advance. Furthermore, normal science is that which cannot see the new phenomena. This is always the case in every established science, that there is a great resistance to see any new phenomena. All what does not fit into the old paradigm is considered as a phenomena that does not belong to it, that is mystical, mysterious, ethereal, and therefore is wiped under the carpet. They have no ability to see something new. Normal science, Kuhn's further says, and this is quite interesting, is intolerant. People in general feel that science, in comparison to religion, is very tolerant. That if in a science somebody comes along with a new idea and with a new invention, that everybody throws up his hat and says, "Hello, that's fine, we take it." Now that is only true insofar as it is a new discovery or a new application within the range of the old paradigm. Then they are very happy to accept it. But the moment in any science really a new paradigm is presented, it is, as in religion, so that the normal science is intolerant. And history in science is full of tragedies where it is seen that physicists, chemists, and so on have to undergo a lot of persecution, ridicule, and all that what goes together with a real good heretic. So more and more in the books that one reads today, one encounters the fact that the philosophizing physicists bring out that there is no great difference or no difference whatever between science and religion, that both are just as intolerant as they can be. And that intolerance is not something that only belongs to Orthodox religion, but that it belongs in the same measure to really Orthodox science. He says that scientists in normal science are full of resistance against everything new. So we do not need to be surprised that in the science of being there is a resistance against every new approach to the subject, and that this resistance is shown very distinctly, and so we just have to know the signs of the times and see what is really acting. He says that normal science does not strive towards completely new vistas. They don't try to do that. What they always try is to polish up the old paradigm, to take the old paradigm, and their whole endeavor is to polish up here a little bit and there a little bit, and to get it a bit clearer and a bit more straight, but they are not engaged in finding really a completely new vista as would be necessary for a new paradigm. He says, in normal science, only such research is accepted which strengthens the old paradigm. Now we have to be careful in our field of thought, of Christian science, whatever the brand of Christian science is, that we do not try always just to work in the line to show something that just strengthens the old paradigm. I think once a paradigm is established and seen as workable and as a progressive step, I think then our thought should again be open for a completely new vista. So not only to strengthen the old paradigm is necessary, but something completely new. Very interesting is the statement that normal science is accumulative in solving problems. It's really always additional to add and add and add constantly new experiments, new proofs of the old thing. And that naturally becomes stale after a while, and so the orthodoxy of any science becomes very, very apparent, just as the orthodoxy of a religion can become very apparent in this way. So not accumulation of data is important. You know, we have gone through various stages in the history of Christian science, and I have seen in my life, could watch right from early boyhood, I could watch how really that has happened, how that accumulative sense was at one time very predominant. And I would say it was very predominant, say, in the 30s, 40s of this century. It was as if first the movement in the 10th and 20th had to struggle somehow to understand more or less the atomistic sense of the textbook, to understand sentence by sentence by sentence what the textbook really presents. And then little by little They felt, really, I understand every sentence. And yet they were somehow dissatisfied with that research. They felt, actually, there must be something more about it. And they had a feeling that there is a lot of spiritual wealth, perhaps hidden away somewhere. And therefore, I can remember that period of the end of the 20th, the 30th, and 40th, when the Christian scientists who were in earnest about the textbook began to collect and collect and collect all sorts of unpublished writings, unpublished statements of Kimball, of Bicknell Young, of Dr. De Lange, of Peter Ross, of, and whoever they were, and collecting and collecting up and up and up piles and piles of papers, and they were passed around and copied, trying to find a deeper secret somehow in the unpublished writings, naturally, without any real effect. You see, they were still in the old paradigm of accumulative research and did not think that there could be a completely different approach to the whole subject of the textbook. So we can see all these things that has happened in the various sciences just happening also in Christian Science. Now, let's go to another point, what Kuhn says, what extraordinary science really implies. Therefore, that science which is building on a new paradigm. He says about extraordinary science that it is a complete new orientation. That's nice, huh? It's a complete new orientation. You orient yourself according to a completely different standpoint of viewpoint. It is really that which brings forth new phenomena. I don't know if you remember, perhaps from my introductory talks, or I think if you have read Joel Chesson's Imperative Step, I think she quotes it there too, how Dunuy, in his very famous book on human destiny, gives a very interesting example of how a change of standpoint changes the view of the world and therefore changes the object. You remember that example which he takes about the razor blade and said, if you look at the razor blade with the bare eye, you see just one straight line as the edge of the razor blade. Just one straight line. But if it's says, if you take a microscope and look at the same very object through the microscope, you see a zigzag line. So suddenly the straight line becomes a zigzag line. And all that has happened is that the razor blade is the same razor blade, but one standpoint or viewpoint has changed. Therefore, the new orientation has changed. Or he says, if you look at it, say, from the chemical point of view, you see just little blocks of iron and little blocks of carbon, and that's what you see. No more a straight line, no more a zigzag line. Suddenly you see something completely different, and yet it is the same object. Therefore, it's the point of view that determines our experience. Just as we have seen that yesterday, that fundamentally we see always that it is consciousness that determines our experience, and it all depends what kind of consciousness we have, and then that determines our experience. He goes a step further and say, okay, if you look at that razor blade, say, from the standpoint of the subatomic physics, all what you see is just a swarm of gnats, so to say, namely a lot of little electrons swirling around and a lot of empty space. And that is your view of the same phenomena. So you can see in that way he tried already to show that really every new standpoint will bring forth new phenomena. And therefore, also with us, if we can really reorientate our consciousness and reorientate it naturally to a higher level of consciousness, we will also experience a higher sense of being. He says further about extraordinary science that it is not an accumulation of facts and knowledge. It's not an accumulation of facts and knowledge. I really wish this could be seen and understood, because the whole history of Christian Science is a history that tries really to accumulate facts and knowledge. The earnest Christian Scientist is, as I have said, the one who really studies his books, the Bible and Mrs. Eddy's works, tries to understand each verse, each sentence, and in addition to that, accumulate all the notes from Kimball to Bicknell Young to Dr. DeLange to Dorley to Shaw Cook to Margaret Laird, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on, Eustace, and so on, just piling up and piling up facts upon facts. And after 50 years, they do not know anything more than before, because it's a false method. What we need is not accumulating facts. What we need is to approach the subject with higher methods. And it's a question of a higher methodology that is really necessary. Therefore, so often people come along and say to me, you know, it's very difficult to follow because I forget things so easily. I have not a good memory. I listen to you and I can understand you, but then I forget it and I can't retain what I have heard. And I feel what I want to answer in that case is, thank God you can't, because that is just a burden to accumulate facts upon facts upon facts. All what we need is not that accumulation of facts and having a good memory and memorizing a lot of statements and verses and sayings. What we need is, in order to understand science, is really to know the method of how to understand. And so one's whole accentuation of study should be shifted to the question of method, methodology, of getting hold only of the fundamentals of being, namely the capitalized terms and the way they calculate. So anybody who doesn't have a good memory isn't really in a bad situation. I think I always state that I can hardly quote from the Bible and from the textbook, and I don't even try to do it. I don't try to memorize any statements from the textbook or from the Bible. I don't think there are more than half a dozen or a dozen which I may quote, and even then I may not quote them correctly. I don't want to. I don't see any purpose in it. I don't see any purpose in reiterating the same words. That's just doing our beats. What we need is to find the system of being. And when we see the system of being, then we have to see and to understand how that system operates, and that's all what we need to know. Think of Einstein. There are so many nice stories about him. Though he was a great thinker, he never really could count his money properly. When he went into a tram or a bus in Berlin, he never could calculate how much money he should get back from the bus conductor. That was just above his knowledge, you know. So that kind of mathematics isn't mathematics. It's just rote. So also in our branch of science, in the science of being, don't try to memorize too much. Try to understand, and that's something different than to memorize. Kuhn goes on and says that extraordinary science is supported by people which are new in the subject. Now this is a critical statement because it states that really those that come at the 11th hour, as Jesus would say, get just as much as those who have been in it from the first hour. It means that usually people that come in late into an idea, that they are not preconceived, that they are not yet in ruts, that they are still open to the subject, and therefore don't have to throw out first a lot of old preconceived thoughts and knowledge, but that they can really start, so to say, from scratch. That's why, especially in the way of our teaching, we find that those who come fresh to this idea, who perhaps have no Christian Science background, that they are those who can very easily get hold of this teaching. It isn't so that you first have to be an old hand in the old paradigm of Christian Science in order to make any progress. It is a question of flexibility, of consciousness that is necessary, and that is important. He says that extraordinary science is really supported by people who are young and not bound to tradition. Young in thought, young in approach, not bound by tradition, by the ruts. You know, this is something that one has to see. When one is talking with Christian scientists of normal science, in the normal science field, you can talk about anything what you like. After the first sentence, they answer, yes, Mrs. Eddy says, so and so and so and so. And you say something more and they say, yes, Mrs. Eddy says, so and so and so. Or you talk about anything about the sun or about the flowers, and they will say, yes, Mrs. Eddy says so and so and so and so. It is that constant reiteration of the same statements of being bound back just to one way of stating something, namely the way the Bible or Mrs. Eddy has stated it. So I would think that one can really see if somebody has got a new touch of extraordinary science the moment they really can formulate something by themselves and don't have to substantiate and support what they say by what Mrs. Eddy said or by what Mr. Dawley said or by what Max said. You know, it's always a weak point in any discussion if somebody discusses something with somebody else and then gets step by step cornered, and when they are really cornered, then the only way out is to say, but Max said, and that's the authority, you know. Now, this is not science. Extraordinary science is really when we are not bound to tradition, to traditional phraseology, and to have an authority in a book or in a person. Our authority should be in truth itself. Our authority should be in our comprehension of the system of the subject itself, which would lend itself to completely new formulation of what we want to state. So I would like to see that time when we can be together and discuss earnestly really the subject of the science of being, without that we have to state constantly what Mrs. Eddy said. Actually, we will find that what Mrs. Eddy said was usually in a completely different connotation than the discussion is on. And this is not right, to quote somebody who has written something in a different connotation and quote it in a completely other situation. So the new paradigm really asks us to understand the science of being per se, to have the one truth as our inner authority, and that one truth, when it is understood in its science, lends itself completely to new formulation, to new statements, to new symbolisms, and to using new symbols. He says that in extraordinary science, progress is made by a small community of specialists. You see, it's the very opposite of what the human mind would like us to see to happen. The human mind would like to see to happen that we draw the masses, that we are a Billy Graham or a Maharishi or anything like that, that just draws the masses by the thousands and thousands. That's not a new paradigm. A new paradigm cannot, by its own nature, draw the multitudes. It can only draw quite a small community of what he says, specialists. Naturally, all those are specialists who really concentrate their thought and consciousness on the new paradigm and therefore investigate the paradigm, the theory and application of the new paradigm and see the practicality of the new paradigm. And this takes such an enormous amount of energy and devotion and time that we cannot expect that the masses can take it.